After a wonderful week of staying up late and watching all the action from Royal Ascot, it's now time to speak to our correspondent in the UK and relive all of that wonderful Royal Ascot Group 1 action.
It's a two-length lead for Palace Pier, races the waterline, and Palace Pier is the winner of the Queen Anne. He's been busy, he's very talented, he's very tough. Poetic Flair has won in great style. Subjectivist Joe Fanning stole a race heading into the home straight. Subjectivist wins by a good distance.
Oh, well, they were just three of the highlights over five wonderful days, and it could have almost been the way we describe Lee Modishead over that 5 days. He's been busy and he's very talented, and it's great to have him giving us his wrap-up of another fabulous Royal Ascot. How are you, Lee?
I'm very well, sir. I am rested and I am recovered.
It was an amazing week because crowds were back in some extent, and it was a test case, really, for the UK about how they could open up and hold a large event. And then the twists and turns from the weather, the calibre of horses, the jockeys and the trainers, it was an unforgettable week.
Yeah, as you say, Michael, even without the actual racing on the track, there was an awful lot of drama and also sort of different sub-layers to it. So it was a government test event over here, so a number of sports events are being used to, in effect, I suppose, trial the effectiveness of our vaccine system, whereby you have to take vaccine tests before you go to the meeting, and you have to take COVID tests, after the meeting, and they will then assess how successful they've been. So that all took place, but it meant that 12,000 people were able to attend, or nearly 12,000 people were able to attend every day. There were no masks, there was no social distancing, so it felt a very liberating experience. It felt like a race meeting of old, but for Ascot, of course, it was difficult because they were so heavily limited in crowds. Although it was really enjoyable for all those present, Ascot will have lost a significant seven-figure sum. So £7, 8, 9 million will have cost them to stage the meeting. But in the with the bigger picture, it was important they did it. So we had that, and then we had a lot of drama with the weather as well. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we raced on fast ground. And then a monsoon arrived tonight on Thursday. Heavy rain through Friday. We thought we were sure to be off on Friday. We actually raced, but we had 3 days of fast ground racing, 2 days of very soft ground racing. So something for everybody.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Sheen Murphy, for the first time crown champion jockey, knocking off Ryan Moore and Frankie Dettori. And for the first time, we had the Gosden partnership as the leading trainer as well.
Yeah, that's right. So, Fady Gosden, who is John's son and his dad's pony partner, he had a Royal Ascot win. It was his first runner at Royal Ascot. So, really, it had to all go downhill from there. But it didn't, really. They did a really successful meeting. I think what was quite good as well, Michael, was there was a good spread of success. So, 26 individual trainers or training partnerships won across the 35 races as a whole. And good for British racing too, because as a sport, we've been whipped in recent months. A disastrous Cheltenham Festival compared to the Irish. The Irish dominated the Grand National, but on this occasion, the Brits did best. Albeit, there were some very impressive Irish winners, including Love in the Prince of Wales Stakes, Poetic Flair in the St James's Palace Stakes. So some good Irish wins, but the home team, thankfully, had some success last week.
Speaking of those outstanding wins, you mentioned a couple of them, and day one it got off to an amazing start with Poetic Flair and Palace Pier, and then of course we had Stradivarius unfortunately not being able to complete his four wins in the Gold Cup. What was the highlight? Give us your gold, silver and bronze from the 5 days of Royal Ascot.
I suppose for me, actually, Michael, the gold would be horse who didn't win a Group 1 race. It was called Wonderful Tonight. Won a Group 2 on the Saturday, the Hardwick Stakes. She's a filly trained by a French guy who now trains in Britain, David Menuzier. And she won a couple of Group 1s towards the end of last season. This was her first run of this season. He said she's probably about 85% fit. But she was very impressive in the Hardwick Stakes. She's now about 10-1 for the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe. And if I can have a bet in that race, Antipost, she'd be the one. She likes digging the ground, which you'll nearly always get in the autumn in Paris. So for me, she was the most exciting winner of the meeting. I think number two, I'd say Poetic Flair in the Denver Palace Stakes. He won with a real sense of the wow factor. He's a horse who's been very busy. He's won in the beginnings in Newmarket in Ireland at the Curragh and in France at Longchamp. He's been a very busy horse. He'd been a solid horse. He'd won one of those races, finished second in another. But what we saw at Ascot was a brilliance that hadn't been apparent before. It was his first time on really fast ground, and he thrived on it. So he's a star miner. When he comes up against Palace Pier, maybe at Goodwood, maybe at Deville for the summer, that'll be a task to savour. I think the third great performance, I'd say, was from Subjectivist in the Gold Cup. We'd all hope that Stradivarius would become the second horse to win four Gold Cups. That didn't play out. He had a rotten run through the race. It's one that France Littori isn't going to have a second crack at. He would ride a very different sort of race. But that said, I think what we found was that when Stradivarius did get daylight, he didn't really pick up in a way that made you think he would have beaten Subjectivist, who rolled on a long way from home and pretty much had the race won early in the home straight. And again, when they renew rivalry, probably Goodwood in the Goodwood Cup, that'll be a clash to savour too. So loads of great racing across the 3 days. Some fantastic Group 1 performances, some great performances from just underneath the Group 1 level, and some exciting two-year-olds coming through too. In one of the two races, we almost had a winner for the Queen. And in fact, Mike, if I was going to say it's like gold, silver and bronze, maybe the highlight of the week for people who were there was on Saturday. It was a one day when the Queen came racing. No royal procession this year, but she arrived in a black Bentley in the parade ring at about 2:10 on Saturday afternoon. National anthem played. She got out of the Bentley, and there was the biggest cheer of the week. You know, the whole world knows she had a really rough time this year. It was a one day at Royal Ascot this season, and there was such a huge amount of affection for her. I think anyone who was there was really touched by that, and I'm sure she would have been too.
And she looked so happy to be back at Royal Ascot from all the pictures that we'd seen as well. And Holly Doyle, another victory as well. And then we had the protest, Campanelli and Dragon Symbol in the Commonwealth Cup. I think most people over here in Australia expected it to be upheld. Was it considered the correct decision at Royal Ascot as well?
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, there was a strange subplot in the sense that Ashley Murphy, the champion jockey on the horse who was disqualified, Dragon Symbol, believed his horse was the best horse. But he also said that Frankie Dettori had said his horse was the best horse in the race. Frankie very much disputed Frankie Rowe Campanelle, who was awarded the contest. These things are always pretty difficult, I think, over here certainly, because ultimately stewards have to take a subjective view and decide, do they think that the horse who caused interference, that his or her position was improved relative to the other horse because of the interference. I felt watching that race, you had two horses dueling at the middle of the track. One horse has bumped the other horse three times, carried that horse five, six, seven lanes across the race course, and won on the nod. And I think my view was, if you don't award the victim the race in those circumstances, when would you do it? So that was disappointing for the horse who was taken out, Dragon Symbol. I thought it was the right result.
Over here in Australia, a lot of headlines were caused by Aidan O'Brien's comments following Armoury's run behind Love. What reaction did those comments, if any, have in the UK, and our fellow trainers in the same mindset as Aidan O'Brien? Yesterday we spoke to Grace Forbes, who's the head vet here at Racing Victoria, and she basically corrected what Aidan O'Brien said about the scintigraphy scans and the amount of time that a horse would need to take out from training to undergo those. Has there been much discussion in the UK about other trainers not wanting to come to Australia?
There hasn't as yet. I sort of echo what I was saying last week, really. I think it's once into July onwards that people over here will really start talking about Melbourne in the spring. But there was coverage of it, and I thought what was interesting was that in consecutive days, you had very different commentary from perhaps two of the trainers who've been most associated with the Melbourne Cup in recent years. Because on the Tuesday, Charlie Appleby won the Queen's Vase. With a really exciting horse called Kamara. On the Wednesday, Kamara, the same day, won the Queen's Vase with a horse who, a three-year-old, three-year-old, who looks very much like a cross-counter type. And Charlie was saying he actually named the Melbourne Cup as a potential target. William Buick, the jockey, agreed. So it sounded as though they were thinking, certainly, of the Melbourne Cup. But Aidan, who was speaking to Dubai's Racing Channel after the Prince of Wales Stakes with Love and Armley, he ran a really good race to be third. It was suggested to him, could Melbourne be on the agenda again for Armley? And he pretty much ruled that out straight away, talking about this scintigraphy scan and being very negative about it. As you say, Michael, the RV vets have and the RV team have been pretty active since then. I think what has become clear is that, assuming that the race in Victoria position would be correct, repracted, it would have to take place over here, they have a big communications job to do. I think we knew when this whole story broke initially that the PR and the comms over here hadn't worked particularly well, that people were very negative about and they're almost ruling out the idea of a spring carnival challenge before they thought about it. But if you have Aidan O'Brien, the most powerful trainer in the world, who seemingly claims not to, or seemingly doesn't understand the processes with which his horses would need to go through in order to run in Melbourne, then you have got a problem. Now, if Aidan can be persuaded that his fears are actually too extreme and that the process his horse would have to go through aren't as severe as he believes them to be, then perhaps he can change his mind. I think that would have to be the hope, because if Aidan's position was what he was as he thought it would be, then I couldn't see a way he could backtrack from those comments, because the way he was talking, he was saying that no horse over here he would want to put through, really, except for very severe circumstances. And I know from speaking to other people that they have viewed that scan in the same way. That has been, I think, the bugbear that a lot of people have had, that they feel it's almost a welfare negative to put their horses through that. Now, if a lot of people think that over here, then Racing Victoria have a job to do to explain to trainers over here that it's not that bad. Now, of course, it's just one part of a very big jigsaw, and there are an awful lot of complications that people here view when it comes to a spring carnival challenge. But at least if they can tackle that particular scan concern, then maybe we're one step close to having runners again.
The one other big question that was raised by local trainer Mick Price during the week is what the ramifications could be for the European horses if they don't pass the vet test. This is what Mick Price had to say. I'd be interested to get your reaction to this.
Yeah, OK. So is the question being answered if the horse fails the criteria of the VRC to bring it out here, does it fail the criteria to continue to race it in Europe? Well, if the BHA come out and says, we're going to go down exactly the same line as the VRC and we're going to bar your horse from racing, well, why would you want to do it?
Has there been any indication from the British Horse Racing Authority about that?
There hasn't as yet, no. Certainly nothing publicly. It was a question that has been raised in the past with a name that will be very familiar to your listeners, Marmello, in the past, of course, was ruled out of the Melbourne Cup by the vets over there and then, again, didn't race over here. And I'm sure that would be a concern. Whatever the BHA's position would be on veterinary grounds in terms of whatever issue was detected in Melbourne or through scanning over here that meant that RV wouldn't allow a horse to run. Even if the BHA took a different position with regard to the veterinary concern that was being raised, if they then allowed that horse to continue racing and anything happened to that horse, then you've got a PR disaster on your hands. So it does raise an awful lot of difficult questions because over here, as with you guys, welfare is the big issue that the sport faces. And it would just be a tough one for the sport to tackle over here if a horse who one jurisdiction had said he's not fit to race here then race a serious injury. So I think Mick Price raises a perfectly valid, pertinent and important point.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out in the coming couple of months. Lee, congratulations. Well done on another fabulous week with the Racing Post and the coverage that it puts together. And it's been great for you to keep all the Racing Post listeners up to speed. And the carnival continues over in the UK because it's going to be a huge Irish Derby weekend at the Curragh this weekend as well. Is there a horse for us to follow there?
Yeah, I think I like Hurricane Lane, Michael, who finished third at Epsom behind his stable companion, Adayar. In the Derby, he was never really the sort of horse I think that was going to be best suited by the weird and wacky wonders of Epsom Downs. The Curragh is a much more conventional race course, a galloping mile and a half track, although Aidan O'Brien's High Definition, who didn't go to Epsom, will be the one to beat according to the betting. Charlie Appleby's got a very strong group of middle distance 3-year-olds this season, whereas Aidan O'Brien, Paulie's got some tremendous mile-and-a-half, three-year-old fillies, and in fact, mile three-year-old fillies as well. What another classic in Chantilly in France over the weekend with Joan of Arc. His three-year-old colts look a pretty average bunch this season. So at about 3-1, 7-2 over here, I'd be tipping Hurricane Lane to beat High Definition and win the Irish Derby.
We'll be looking forward to all the action this weekend. Lee, once again, appreciate you keeping up to speed, keeping us up to speed with everything over there.
Cheers, Michael. Have a great week there, you guys.